Hey, Freedom Family, welcome to the Unlock Your Freedom podcast. My name is Kira Miller. I am the founder and host of this series. Every other week, we'll bring you some of the most life-giving conversations that will empower you to overcome your shame, own your truth, and unlock your freedom. Thank you for joining this conversation today. Now let your freedom journey begin. Hey, Freedom Family, welcome back to the Unlock Your Freedom podcast. My name is Kira Miller. I am the founder and host of this series. And on today's episode, we had Davis Mallory, who is a Nashville-based singer-songwriter and was also a former cast member on MTV's Real World and The Challenge. We talked quite a bit about how he struggled with sexuality and hiding from that, and how he's really like overcome that and been able to just fully be who he is. And we also talked quite a bit about how he struggled with anger, and he's actually just realizing how much he has struggled with anger his entire life. With addiction, he would like stop what he was doing, and then he would go back to it, and then he would stop it, and then he would go back to it. Well, if you watched my story, you would remember that I basically did the exact same thing until finally it got to a point where I was just tired of being sick all the time. And Davis actually talked quite a bit about that today. And so, yeah, I'm super excited to share this one with you because I really believe it's going to help you to unlock your freedom. So here we go. Who was Davis in the beginning of like your journey with shame?
You know, I still have been, so my grandfather just died. Okay. And I've been spending time with my grandmother, mm-hmm. which has been bringing me back to memories of myself as a child, like just having a lot of flashbacks. Yeah. So in this last month or so, I've been having a lot of that who was I reflections.
Interesting.
And thinking about, my mom has told me that even this went into my mind recently, how I used to date girls when I was younger. Mm. And she was confused when I came out, for example.
Yeah.
So that really shocked her. So like, who was Baby Davis?
Yeah.
My mom always calls Baby Davis. It's like, she misses Baby Davis, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I look at videos of myself as a kid, I was always singing. I was very loud, playful. I had a little brother and a little sister, and I would always play with them and like kind of be, because I was the oldest, I was the one that was always kind of tough on them. But and when my mom said I left the house to go to college, that's when the music stopped in the house, because I was always the loud one in the house.
Okay.
When it comes to the subject of shame and guilt, though, I feel like I'm finding as an adult, I've actually been going to 12-step meetings to overcome shame and guilt, because I feel like at things that you do when you're a little kid, when you don't know better, are things that can haunt you when you're an adult.
Yes.
And you have to process them and make amends with different people. And like, that's been something I've been working on with, you know, I'm 2 years sober now from alcohol. So
that's
been working through that process of going back to the different people I've hurt in my childhood, my sister, my brother, my mom, even friends and lovers, and making amends for bad behavior I did when I was a teenager, drinking and being a fool.
Would you say that you maybe like ran away from things when you were younger, like just problems or who you were, even like your sexuality and stuff? It sounds like you kind of were running away.
When you said run away, I remember a very vivid memory of being on a church trip in high school in Mexico, and everyone for the most part was straight, and I felt like the only gay person on the trip. Now that may not have been the case, but it was 100 or 200 people from my high school.
Yeah,
everyone was worshiping, and I remember running away and being out in the, just far away from everyone, and crying and like praying to God, because I wanted what I felt like was a sin and something that was a secret to be cured within myself, and feeling a disconnect from all the boys. Because I also remember having a crush on a lot of the boys and being in a room full of them and not knowing how to handle the thoughts I was having about them.
So you probably couldn't really worship like yourself, because you were so focused on like, oh, I have all these like different thoughts about these guys, and I can't, like in my heart, I'm not supposed to. At least it sounds like from the background that you grew up in, like that's what was kind of told to you. So like, I mean, describe that then, like being, well, specifically being at this church camp, continue like to describe that. And I guess just being around those people, but not really being able to focus in on what you were there for.
Yeah, I mean, I was, for 4 different years, I went on this mission trip for spring break with my church, and it was in Mexico, and we were there to build a house for people that didn't have homes in the northern borders of Mexico, because they kind of wanted to jump the fence and come to America, but were not able to, and so they just squatted on lands.
Dang.
And so that was, It was a great experience.
Yeah.
And I was kind of a Jesus freak in high school, as they call them. Like, went to church many times throughout the week, not just on Sundays.
Yeah.
In my high school, it was cool to be Christian.
Okay.
So the popular girls and the popular guys were all Christians.
Interesting. So you kind of wanted. You grew up here.
I grew up in Georgia, so not so far away.
Yeah, yeah.
But you like wanted to fit in, and by fitting in, you were perfect. You know, like you obeyed Jesus's rules, and homosexuality was very clearly defined as not being within that window.
Right.
And so I actually sang in a group of guys at my church that many of them went on to become Christian singers. One of the most successful as named Christian Stanfill.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
And he and I have known each other since we were babies.
That's
my
crazy.
Mother says we were in cribs next to each other. And we sang at our church in a very large group. And then we auditioned for a small group. And it was five guys, five girls. We were both admitted into it. He went on to become like a Dove Award-winning Christian singer.
He works. Is he with Passion?
He's with Passion.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
And for me, like because I knew I was gay during all of that process, I didn't feel the ability to move forward and be a Christian singer, even though that was who I was and still professed to be.
Mm-hmm.
It just was being gay and being a Christian singer. They were they were opposites. It was one or the other. It wasn't both.
Yeah. Where or how long would you say that you really like struggled with hiding then?
I felt these feelings as early as a fourth or a fifth grader.
Okay.
I remember even telling my mother, and she may remember this, maybe only I remember this, that I liked a boy in my class.
Okay.
And I remember the response was like, you just told me something bad. And so hearing that, I withdrew that information and didn't share it with anyone else and kept it to myself. And I had a journal throughout my childhood that I would journal things in. And she found it when I was in high school. And that's when she realized that from that moment to high school, I had been dealing with this secret feelings.
Yeah.
And my grandfather is a Christian psychiatrist and owns a Christian practice. And he's has like a best-selling book at this time in my life. So I was given sort of free counseling through his company and then was kind of coached on how to deal with being gay and how it's curable and it's a choice. And in my own grandfather's words, I remember him saying like, having these thoughts are not the sin, but acting out on these thoughts are the sin.
Yes.
So then it became just, well, just don't do anything. So for a lot of my years, I just didn't do anything with anyone. I'd never kissed a boy. Like, I hadn't had sex with anyone. It was just in my brain. And so that was me being straight to myself. But also finding as I grew up and got into college years, it wasn't going away. In fact, it became more intense during college years when I started having sexual experiences with girls and really not enjoying them the way I thought I was supposed to. So
do you remember like in those sexual experiences that you would almost like have these thoughts about like, well, this isn't right. Like I'm actually attracted to guys, so I can't enjoy it anyways.
Yeah.
Really.
I felt like I was putting on a facade. People constantly asked me if I was gay, and I constantly said I wasn't. I had to kind of have the conversation, how would I fight the next person that says I'm gay? And what would I say after they'd asked me, because it took me by surprise. And in my senior year of college, I met a guy who didn't go to my college, but he went to my high school and had been out. He was younger than me, but only by 3 years. And because of the three-year gap, we never met during high school. And so when I was home for summer, I met him, and he'd been out because my sister, I don't know if she knew I was gay, but she's like, you should meet this guy. He's gay, and he's at my high school. Maybe, maybe she knew.
Yeah.
Maybe not.
Sometimes sisters have telepathy.
Because I hadn't told her yet.
Interesting.
And I talked to him, and his experience was like the one I wanted. He'd had a boyfriend from a kind of rival high school, but he had a boyfriend, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
He had a lot of friends, and people thought he was cool and accepted him in a way that I'd never been accepted before.
Yes.
And so his example prompted me to come out my final year of college because I didn't want to finish college without also having that experience.
Yeah.
So I came out the summer going into my senior year of college.
Okay. To like everybody?
Yeah. So I was on a summer trip as well in Europe and I had been spending 6 months with about 50 students. They were all people I knew very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
So I told one of the girls on the first week of school and she's like, I don't think you should tell anyone else. Let's just keep it between us. Because it was so liberating, I told more people.
Yeah,
and then
awesome.
Everyone knew by the end of the trip.
Yeah.
And when I came back to college, it had caught fire around school. And so my first day of my senior year, people were hugging me without telling me why, but I knew why. And so I got this overwhelming support from people.
Yeah.
And it was in that moment that I auditioned to go on The Real World and got casted on The Real World in that same like short window of time. And my story was someone who had just come out from a religious family.
Okay. So it seemed like rebellious, probably. It Is that very, what they were kind of looking for?
Yeah, it was spiteful, really. Yeah. I was angry at my family, and I had my friends backing me up, and I felt like the world was going to back me up. And it did further hurt my relationship with my family.
Was there ever a moment, I know you talked about like coming out specifically, but was there ever a moment that like maybe all of your shame about this was like exposed? And maybe that was when you came out.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely acted a fool on that show.
Okay.
And I overdrank. And I realized I had a drinking problem in college.
Okay.
My father is a sober alcoholic of like 10 years. Okay. And his mother and his mother's parents were very hardcore alcoholics. Like,
so it's just down the line.
It just was very just deep in her side of the family. And so my mother always cautioned me never to drink alcohol. And from a kid, having a mother telling you to never drink alcohol, that sounds like what every other mother would tell their kid.
Right.
But I didn't get the importance of it. And I wanted to try it, and I needed to try it to learn. And so I got arrested in college for underage drinking.
Okay.
I wound up in a hospital in college for overdrinking.
Dang.
You know, every time I drank in college, I would overdrink, blackout. People would come up to me like, "Do you remember what you did last night?" And I wouldn't, and that was scary to me.
Yeah.
So, and then I realized in college I needed to stop drinking.
Okay.
So in the real world, it hadn't stopped. And the first week in the real world, I got in a fight with one of the guys and said something I shouldn't have said. And decided I was going to leave the show, and then I thought about it the next morning. I'm like, no, this is a good opportunity. I'm not going to leave the show. I'm going to stay.
Yeah.
I'm just going to try to be sober. And I tried to be sober for some of the months and then started drinking again and wound up falling asleep naked on the show on the one episode that my mom came to visit me on, which she says is the only episode she watched.
Really?
So it's just not a good episode for her to see me.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah.
Dang.
But it was just a reminder then that I should have quit drinking, and now here I am, many years removed from that show, finally sober and just wishing I'd quit a long time ago.
Yeah. Okay, so how long has it been since The Real World? Because I know that you were on that and you said The Challenge, which I don't know what that is.
So I did The Real World in 2006, and I did my very first challenge, which is like a all-stars competition for money from people from different seasons of The Real World.
Oh, like
about 20 to 30 people.
Okay.
And then you compete for money.
Okay.
And I did three of those.
Okay. Gotcha.
And I did the last one I ever did was in 2011.
Okay. So you were you still drinking when you were doing the challenge and stuff?
On my first challenge, I remember drinking, but I also remember having made such an ass of myself on The Real World that I didn't want to do that on my first challenge. So I was like very mindful of my behavior.
Yeah.
Because when I did my first challenge, The Real World hadn't even aired yet. So I didn't even know how I was going to look on TV.
Yeah.
And then on my second challenge, I was still in that same mindset. And by my third challenge, I'd actually become sober. So I was, people probably don't remember me on my third show because I was so uneventful.
Really?
Like, you really have to be a crazy, drunk, annoying to make TV time. And I was sober on the third show. So wasn't really doing much.
So who would you say that people like, who would you say you were maybe when you were on these shows? Like, what did people label you as, and what did that do for you? Like, did it actually kind of like prop you up, or did it actually kind of bring you down?
I mean, I feel like people labeled me as like one of the good looking guys, but also like the gay guy and also one of the religious guys. Mm-hmm. I tried to be like a peacemaker in most instances, although I definitely was guilty of stirring the pot at times because someone would do something I thought was wrong and I would tell someone else.
Okay.
But that was me just being a truth person.
Okay.
But I also tried to always do the right thing in situations, even when it was uncomfortable for myself. Like there was a time when everyone was sick on a work week.
Okay.
And I was the one person that came back to work, even though I was still kind of sick. But from my point of view, I felt like it was a good example to show myself, like, putting my best foot forward.
Okay.
And I felt like that was what I was always trying to do in situations. Even if I made an ass of myself, I was always trying to say sorry and, like, show that I was working on myself.
Yeah.
And not be the kind of character that's the villain or that doesn't have, like, a heart in the storyline.
And do you think, like, maybe reality TV or just even whether it's TV, entertainment, music, any of that kind of stuff. Like, do you think sometimes it like twists a person into someone they're not? Or do you think that maybe when those people are in those situations, they kind of like maybe have a little bit of a dream to become that thing that they're not. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I think it's the second, and it's probably a little bit of the first, but I would say it's mostly the second. Because people really are themselves. Like if you want to come in and you want to be horrible on the show or you want to be an angel, that's how the world's going to see you because you're in control of your behavior.
Yeah.
However, I do think people who have seen previous shows come in with a little bit of like, I got to be like that person that I look up to. Mm. That person was really big. I need to be big.
Okay.
So some of it is just a fulfilling that.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because my friends and I, we actually talk about, because they're musicians, and we always kind of talk about, and I guess me working in music, like people, it's like, it's almost like people, I mean, people don't necessarily get into it for fame, but like there is sort of this like almost mentality that you have to have to like be a successful musician. And the interesting thing to me is like a lot of people see musicians and entertainers as like non-committal in the sense of like having friends and like they really are just so focused on the work life. And I always thought that it was like the music industry made them into that way, but then I was like, you know what, I think people actually like just desire success sometimes more than they do friendships and stuff like that. And so it's not like the music industry is twisting them, but it's almost like, it's kind of like they're enabling them, but they are like, they go into that industry because that's kind of who they want to be.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I can definitely attest to that the lonely feeling I feel on the weekends sometimes where I really don't have friends to hang out with because all of my friends are work related.
Yeah.
And so when the weekend hits, it's like, well, we're not working. Right. We're trying to have fun. But who are my friends to have fun with? Well, I don't have any because I only have work friends.
Dang. Yeah. Okay. Huh. Like even like do you tour and stuff or not really?
Sometimes, but I'm not like on the road often.
Well, I was going to say because so many people, I mean, of course, here, LA, probably New York as well. But like so many people here are on tour a lot of times. And what I kind of have learned is like the people who seem to go on tour all the time can be like fairly non-committal. And it hurts for me because like I want to be friends with a lot of those people because like they inspire me and stuff. But it's hard to like actually have time with them because they are constantly on tour and like that's their focus. They're just not really focused on what's back home, you know.
Like I'll notice even this week I was hanging out with someone and I was there for 2 hours and all of a sudden I started feeling restless because I was like my time could be spent on like my laundry list of things that I should be doing to help move myself forward in my career that no one else is going to do unless I do it myself.
So okay, and then after after like the MTV stuff and you got sober, you said
2011 2002 years ago.
That's right.
2017.
So when you like when did you end up going to work for Astralworks and like now you're a musician, so kind of talk about that. How what's
so
that
like
pattern?
My steps after the real world were I met a guy who was a fan of me on the real world and he convinced me successfully to move in with him in Chicago. And it was during 2 years of living in Chicago that I interned at a booking agency, began writing a music blog for an MTV-owned website. So kind of used the relationship to get that job and going to a lot of concerts and interviewing artists and really trying to figure out what it was I wanted to do.
Yeah.
I still knew I wanted to be in music and even thought to myself, I want to be a singer. But sometimes I didn't think I was good. And that was a big struggle for me.
Okay.
And I have a lot of videos of that chapter of my life just sitting there singing. Sometimes I was drinking wine and I was just singing to myself on my camera.
Yeah.
And I didn't think I was very good, but I just, you could tell I was really wanting to be these people whose songs I was singing.
Okay. Yeah.
And after a year in of this relationship, I realized it wasn't someone I wanted to spend forever with.
Mm-hmm.
Started thinking about where I wanted to go next and decided to look at New York.
Okay.
And I reached out to some relationships, like work people I knew, and I got a job interview and got a job at Astralworks, which was in, now it's the label to Halsey, but when I was there,
right.
it was the label to David Guetta and Swedish House Mafia, Kylie Minogue, Empire of the Sun, other artists in that sort of synth pop genre.
Yeah. Does Corey Robinson there too?
He's there now. Yeah. And he was, like, he was there when I was there too.
Yeah.
Eric Prydz, Nervo.
Yep. All my people. Love that.
Yeah.
So like, well, being in the dance music space, or electronic maybe I would say, because you were working with like Empire of the Sun and stuff. But like being in that space, how did that affect, one, like the drinking and all that kind of stuff, but also like, how did that help you to really embrace who you are? Because obviously there's such a culture in the dance music scene of like, express yourself and just truly be who you are. But there also is the other half of that, which is like party and drugs and stuff like that. But there's good and bad.
I would say my drug usage was at an all-time high.
Really?
During okay. that chapter of my life.
Yeah.
Because I was going to DJ parties. I was going out more nights than I had ever gone out before. Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. I was going out sometimes 7 nights a week, most often 5 times a week.
Okay.
I was smoking weed almost every single day.
Yeah.
Actually, I'd like withdrawn from alcohol and I would just get high and then just be high.
So you replace it with something else.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I tried ecstasy, cocaine. Those are the only two things I remember doing in that year other than marijuana and occasional alcohol.
Yeah.
Okay. And going out a lot.
Dang. That's crazy. Because, I mean, kind of like what I was saying earlier, I was very in that scene, but I wasn't really, like, I've only ever drank, and I didn't really even drink when I was in that scene, which is kind of crazy. Like, I still made it through, like, 7 a.m. parties and stuff like that. And I don't know how I did it, but I think I was just so, like, the music was so euphoric for me, and like being a part of something with all of those people was just so euphoric that I wanted to like stay out and party with people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it was like, it was always heartbreaking to see like my friends and stuff doing things that, not even that I didn't approve of, but that just like kind of hurt me to watch them like do that to themselves, essentially.
I feel that.
Mm-hmm.
My mom recently mailed me a letter I had written when I was in high school, and it was me being at a high school party and watching people that I knew from school drinking at night, and how I was sad to see that behavior in them, because I knew that I was sober during high school, and like I knew that sobriety was a beautiful thing, and watching people get drunk was not.
Right.
So I know those feelings.
Dude, I literally used to go home after like high school and cry because I was like, I'm so heartbroken by people who like, and again, it's not just like the occasional drinking. It was like people like going hard and blacking out, and they would just glorify it. And I'm like, but that's like, what's good about that? You know, it was, it was hard for me to see that too.
And I like to tell people this story because I've been sober for 2 years and I'm constantly seeing things that keep me sober, and like I was DJing one time and this woman came up to me and thought I was straight, so she starts hitting on me and I tell her I'm gay. So she returns, and now I notice that she's a little drunk, and she shows a photo of her gay friend. She's like, "You like him?" And I'm like, "He's fine." And then she comes back over and now she's extra drunk.
Yeah.
And by the time the night was over and I was leaving to go downstairs, I walked out onto the street of Broadway, Nashville, and I see an ambulance, and she's getting put in the back. And it was so saddening to think that that's where it had escalated for her.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a reminder, like, that was once me.
Right.
And that could be me again. So sobriety is, like, my best thing.
Yeah. So talk about your recovery process. Like, the last 2 years, because I know before we started, you were kind of talking about how, well, I guess in the beginning, you were kind of talking about how you're, like, now really in the healing process with family and stuff.
Well, so, I mean, little known fact, but also sort of anyone who knows me knows this, but I punched my ex-boyfriend in the face when I was drunk.
Whoa.
And I got put in jail for doing so.
Okay.
Even though he hit me in back because I hit him harder, they just chose to only arrest one of us.
Okay.
And through that process, I was told not to drink, and I was also told to go to anger management.
Okay.
And I think for me, that was my third time being arrested. My first one, which I told you about, was in college for underage drinking. My second one was a DUI. Now here I am, third time in jail. You know, the whole like, fool me once, shame on you, fool me twice, shame on me.
Yeah,
now
yeah.
it's like, I don't want this to continue. Because every time I was in jail, you look around and almost everyone in there is also drunk. And it's a realization that like alcohol and drugs is what's putting people into this system.
Interesting.
So I'm like out there in a world that's telling everyone to get drunk every Friday night, and every Friday night everyone's going to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to keep having that happen to me. Every Friday night I go get blacked out with my friends and keep getting put in this jail that costs me all this money. And it's like, it's
and really sucking
so
your
much.
Life away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I just was realizing this is it. So I did go to AA meetings.
Okay.
I felt like a monster because I hit someone this time, which wasn't what I'd ever been to jail before for.
Yeah.
And I remember my first AA meeting bawling so hard, telling people what I did and how I had dealt with so much shame. And a girl in one of the AA meetings told her story on what they call a speaker meeting. And she paralleled so much of what I had gone through, being raised from a Christian family, experimenting with alcohol, realizing in college she had a problem, quitting, going back to it, dating someone that enabled her, which I had also done, quitting, just keep quitting and then keep coming back and keep quitting and then keep coming back. And finally I was like, okay, I got to quit. Yeah. This is it for me.
Mm-hmm. And were you kind of sick of being sick? That's what I always said to myself, like when I was in really like the hardest part of my life and like being someone I wasn't. Basically I catfished people and like I did it for like 10 years. And I finally decided after, well, I think it was 8 years. I think I decided after year 10, like after being caught several times, I was like, I literally can't do this anymore because I want to start loving myself and I want to start loving other people fully. And I was finally, after literally 8 years or so, was like, I have to stop doing this. So like, maybe talk about that, like, which you already kind of are, but like really talk about the part where you decided like, I don't want to be this anymore. Like I want to take care of myself and I want other people to like see me as the true person that I am.
Yeah. I mean, noticeably, I look different from who I was 2 years ago to today. People walk up to me even as recently as like a weekend ago and are like, how did you lose all the weight? I'm like, well, I quit drinking because that was making me heavier. And also, I wasn't taking care of myself in the gym. And I did struggle with a lot of negative thoughts and not self-harm, but just kind of self-hatred. Yeah. I think I carried a burden for the show and how that affected my relationship with my siblings, which wasn't good. It's better today, and it's actually the best it's ever been today, which I owe cutting drinking out of the mixture as one of the reasons.
Okay.
But I did have a lot of like regret and shame for the way that show and my own personal behavior wrecked my family life, which was really just non-existent. I didn't have a relationship with anyone in my family anymore. I was very selfish. I was a selfish artist.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I had been trying to follow my dream and not really caring about anyone at all in my life.
Mm-hmm. And you probably knew that it would hurt people, but you didn't care, right?
Yeah. I mean, I had a relationship with someone who I treated like a personal assistant. Like I was just like, film me everywhere I go, take pictures for me, like do help me achieve my dream.
Yeah.
I wasn't loving him and I was only focused on myself.
Okay. So I guess you were kind of starting to talk about like being in recovery and like being at that AA meeting where the person spoke and it paralleled to your life. So talk about now after that, like talk about the change, the true transformation.
Yeah. I mean, I'm still a work in progress and I'll always be. And I think that growing,
it's a journey.
Even like lately, I've realized my anger is a problem. I'll flare up at people and I'll be regretful and it'll fill me up with a toxicity that I don't like to have inside of me. Mm. Little things like I'll wake up in the morning and an email won't go the way I want it to. And then I'm angry.
Yeah.
Or I'll put something on comment on Facebook. Someone will comment and it'll anger me.
Yeah.
Or a friend will ask me to do something and it won't go the way I want it to go. And then I'll get angry at them. So it's like, I feel like there's always something to work on within yourself.
Yes.
And it's just kind of like, I call it like picking up the carpet and seeing all the shit that's underneath. When I stopped drinking alcohol, I just saw all the shit that was underneath.
Like there was so much more.
Yeah.
The alcohol was not the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alcohol was just kind of like numbing my mind from realizing there were other problems.
So now you're in the process of seeing what the problems were.
Yeah.
Oh, I love and hate that place at the same time.
Yeah. Because
it's awesome to like go back and kind of see everything, like even family stuff, like that's really hard. But it's also, I mean, kind of at the same time, at least when you first start like really introspecting about, you know, 20 years ago in your life, you start to see that like, you know, maybe your family life wasn't what you thought it was. And you start getting really angry with people. But I mean, I will say in your situation, it almost seems like you dealt with that more in the beginning, and now you're like starting to see that you can heal it right now.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and talk about that, like just the healing of relationships and stuff.
I mean, the whole 12-step process is kind of like making a list of the things you've done to hurt other people and then eventually making amends with them. So it's like little by little, I have had conversations with my brother, with my mother, with people that I can remember and have a close enough relationship with where I can like reach out and be like, hey, I'm sorry for getting angry at you or anything I've done. So, I mean, I've been able to make amends with some of the people, but I still have people on my list that I need to make amends with, more distant people that I don't have a relationship with, but I just need to do it, if not for them, for me, just for to kind of clear my conscience from it.
Yeah. Well, and then with anger, would you say that maybe it's kind of always been a struggle for you because maybe you weren't allowed to express, like, not only who you were, but to express, like, your emotions fully when you were growing up and stuff. And now you are.
Yeah. I don't like to be, like, the victim card, but yes. I definitely come from also, like, an angry lineage as well. Like,
same.
Mm-hmm. My grandfather, I always remember, and I love my grandfather, but I always remember him to be very stern and kind of someone I was afraid of. My grandmother as well, which I think produced a father who was like that. And then my father, to me, was also physically abusive.
Yeah.
And my mother was as well, like, and also sort of psychologically. Yes. So I was growing in a place of kind of like fearing my parents and experiencing a lot of intense anger. So like within interpersonal relationships, it's like I can give what I was shown as a child to you because that's just my way of experiencing problems. It's like there was a lot of avoidance of problems and then it builds up and then you're just really angry.
Yeah, and you just blow up.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like dealing with problems right when they happen and like even like, so my grandfather wrote a book on psychology and it's talking about how in problems, sometimes you give someone the silent treatment. Mm. Sometimes you guilt trip them.
Yep.
You'll flip it on them, things like that. And like just this yesterday, one of my female friends was like, let's hang out this weekend. And I was like, well, can we have some of my friends join? And she's like, well, I don't really want to be around any of your friends. And it made me angry. And I felt anger. And I told her that. I was like, you know what? That just made me angry.
Yeah.
But what I also realized is by reading this book is like what I should have said is like, well, it would have been important and I would really like it if you hang out with my friends. Because that's what I want. Yes. But I felt that anger. All of a sudden, the anger came over me.
Yeah.
So it's like dealing with that on a daily basis and understanding how to communicate healthily what you're wanting in a loving manner instead of responding with anger.
Because it's totally okay to be honest and say like, hey, this actually kind of hurt me. Or like, hey, even though like it's not necessarily my intention, it did make me feel angry.
Yeah.
And I think just like honest communication is so important because, I mean, I've lost a lot of friends and like people in my life because I for a long time like didn't know how to communicate with them and then it would either build up into something that like became an explosion sort of or I still never really like dealt with the internal feeling of like, hey, this situation actually really hurt me. And it was actually probably my last friend that is like now sort of my ex-friend, I guess, which we like I think she was probably one of the first people I've ever had the honest conversation of like, hey, you doing this actually really hurt me and like I don't want that but it's just true and sometimes you just have to be honest and say like it did hurt me.
I deal with it with my roommates. It's like an awkward relationship too where it's like how vulnerable do you want to get and how real do you want to get and how professional do you want to keep it and how distant do you want to keep it because your roommates can piss you off.
Oh absolutely. So as an artist, how do you like kind of want to communicate who you are like as your brand and like on social media, but also through your songwriting and everything?
So that's so different. Like I have written songs that are Christian in message and Christian and like kind of alluding to heaven or God. Honestly, are some of the songs that I'm most proud of or get like really great response from people. Like they just like it. So I love those songs. Sometimes I'm writing songs about being heartbroken and like failed relationships and being vulnerable because I'm single and a lot of it is because I self-sabotage relationships. So there's just like pain.
I understand that.
And painful relationships. And then other times I'm writing songs that are just like, let's have fun and let's party because that's what I really enjoy listening to and want to make other people feel when they listen to my music. So I feel like those three things is kind of the division between what I'm writing about.
Yeah. But I love that because it's like, it's totally holistic of who you are. It's not just like this box that you feel like you have to put yourself in. It's literally like the different pieces of who Davis is, which is so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. So would you say then, like, I guess how has maybe faith played a role in, like, the current process of your life?
I mean, I've had a hard year this year with things not going the way I planned them to and also having to believe that that is okay because maybe someone else is planning something else for me that I don't see.
That could be better.
Because I had planned to have an album come out this year and start releasing singles as early as April and one every month. And all of a sudden, as I got ready to release it, everyone involved with the song was like, well, in order for you to release it, you must pay us $3,000 or $1,000.
Yeah.
And then now the songs were going to cost me a collective amount of $10,000, which I did not have budgeted.
Yeah.
I was trying to put money towards a music video.
Okay.
Then I got hit with taxes this year that I didn't know I had to pay. And now that was like $3,000 that goes out of that budget for the album.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, it forced me to start shopping my album to a label because I was going to self-release it. I'd been coached by managers, like, hold on to everything as long as you can. Don't give it away to a label.
Mm, yeah.
But as a result, like, I had never even thought to send it around to labels. And if this hadn't hit my butt, like, I wouldn't have even done that. So now I've already had two labels offer for the album.
Okay.
And I'm just continuing to share it. And I believe that this is actually what was supposed to happen because the label will ideally make it more successful than I could.
Right. Absolutely.
So I'm trusting that that was why this happened.
Yeah.
But with other things in my life, it's like this year was my grandfather died and I'm named after him.
Yeah.
And I have been depressed. I can feel it in myself, like just a sense of not really wanting to get out of bed, kind of re-questioning what my purpose is on life. Like, I was telling a girl today that I feel like because he was a doctor and I was pre-med in college, I assumed at some point in my life, if music didn't pan out for me, I would use my education and go into medicine.
Yeah.
And now I'm feeling like because of lifting alcohol out of my life, I've become very healthy with almost everything I put into my body is like organic and juice. And
I was going to say, you look super fit. So
thank you.
Yeah.
And so I would like to create some sort of like push for other people to be like this. If it's a healthcare, like, that I'm helping other people by educating them, or even I believe that there's a lot of things that our medical system gives us that are actually not good for us. There's a lot of foods on the market that are very not good for us.
Yep.
If it's like working in legal to like take things off the shelves,
yep.
things like that actually excite me. And I feel like music, I don't want to say I've done what I wanted to do in music, but in some sense I have. Like, I have songs on labels. I have songs people can go find. If people want to know what my voice sounds like, you can find that.
Yeah.
But it's like making an impact on this earth may not happen through my songs, but it could happen in other ways. So I feel like that has become a new...
So you're open to like medicine again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A new goal of mine.
That's awesome.
And if, like on social media, I kind of try to share things I see that are like healthy cures to cancer through plants or like foods you should be eating and foods you should not be eating. And like sugar has cancer causing fight. There's like even our water has fluoride, which is horrible for us.
I know, right? Yeah.
Deodorants that have aluminum are bad for us. There's just so many things. So I'm always trying to educate people, even if I'm not doing it from a career point of view, just like through...
Yeah.
Social media.
Yeah. Do you follow like any Nashville like, well, okay, I go to a holistic health doctor and his name's Dr. Motley and the guy's a freaking genius. And he's actually a Chinese like healing medicine doctor.
Nice.
And like it's fully like he's definitely holistic health in the sense that he thinks that all the emotions connect with like whatever is going on in your small intestine when you're digesting, digesting and like the different aspects of the type of food you consume is going to, if you eat something bad, it's going to prolong like emotional healing and that kind of stuff. You should totally follow him. He's like a genius.
I would love to go see him.
Yeah, you should. And he speaks like all the time, but he also like is a holistic health doctor. Yeah. So you should. He's awesome.
Thank
you. Yeah. Yeah. So who would you say Davis is now? Like now that you've really, like you're still in the process of it, of course, but like you're really, you've overcome a ton.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I'm 2 years into something that can be, you know, obviously will be the rest of my lifetime, but it's like 2 years into sort of like becoming a new version of myself, which is not that long.
Yeah.
When, you know, and so I don't know who I am really, you know, I like sometimes I'll write music that I look back on and I'm like, is that what I want the world to think of when they hear my music? Like, or just trying to understand the art form of like my visual brand, because like I put a music video out last year and I got a lot of people saying, I don't like that for you. So then all of a sudden it made me not really make any more music videos for a little while I thought hard about how do I want the world to see me visually?
Right.
So because of this change, because this change is important and this, so I am trying to think about who I am, you know? So I don't know.
Still figuring it out.
Yeah.
Work in progress. That's my favorite when people say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. Who would you say is like maybe kind of held you up during all of this for you? Like, has there been maybe friendships or maybe God or family, anyone who's like really been there for you through all of this? And maybe it's just even yourself.
You know, I hear a lot of people in the AA program say that they don't believe in God because that's part of the program is to believe that there's a higher power.
Yeah.
And in just this week, there's been a couple moments where like I felt God in a way that was physical and not just make believe.
Yeah.
I do pray almost every single night before bed. It kind of just makes me fall asleep.
Yeah.
But it's also myself just releasing any of my negativity. So if it's like my worries, I'm like, God help me with this, or my fears, I'm afraid this is going to happen to me or anything. Like, that's just like my release. But also, like, I was walking the other day and I was just feeling like God was talking to me in some way, not physically, not, I didn't hear anything, but it just felt like I was being in the spoken to and kind of like a wisdom was being bestowed upon me. So, I mean, I do feel that there is a God. Yeah. And I went to Israel last year and felt like that was driving me towards wanting to understand Judaism in a way that I'd never really wanted to before because I kind of forgot that Jesus is Jewish.
I know, right?
And I was raised Christian, so I've spent all my life going to Christian events. So this morning before coming here, I actually went to a bar mitzvah congregation in Green Hills and I've been getting more involved with just the Jewish community because I feel like that's also getting an understanding of what Jesus's education was and his mindset was.
So I actually, like, I'm Jewish by birth and, like, I've chosen to be a Christian, but I, like, I never want to shun that part of me because I'm like, Jesus was also Jewish and, like, they are truly the chosen people. And I don't know exactly fully what that means, but, like, I want to understand that, you know, and I want to embrace fully, like, who I am. And I think it's special that people are, like, Jewish, and especially if you're going to choose, like, to still believe in Jesus, even being Jewish is wildly interesting to me, but it's special. It's cool.
Yeah.
What has maybe been, like, I don't know, has there been, like, an inspirational quote? It could be a Bible verse. It could be, like, a song, a story of any sort that has, like, really defined your journey for you or, like, at least really helped you to heal through all of this. Could be multiple.
I'm sure there are, but nothing's, like, just blatantly popping into my mind. I mean, my mom sends me a lot of Bible verses and friends do post things on Instagram that I find, like, great, but nothing's just like, this was it for me. I'm trying to think. I mean, I have, I guess something I'll answer to your previous question, which might lead me to answer your second question, is I do still go to therapy. Like every week I go see a therapist in Nashville and I have friends that are also very much holistic and help me as well. I go hiking sometimes and find that to be a great release of just like my problems. But as far as like a verse or a quote, I can't think of anything as bad.
Yeah, but it's really just being able to talk to people. It sounds like that's awesome. Yeah. Or release what you're going through.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then I think the final question is just like, where can people find you on social media?
Social media, Davis Mallory, D-A-V-I-S-M-A-L-L-O-R-Y.
Cool. Instagram, and Twitter.
Everything.
All the above.
Okay. All the above, yeah.
Spotify?
Spotify as well.
Cool. All right. Yeah. Cool. Well, it was so good having you on.
Yeah,
and
thank
like,
you.
Seriously, thank you. I think I say this every single time, but that's kind of the whole point of this podcast is like, I just want to acknowledge you because not only have you overcome a ton of stuff, but you're still in the process. Like, you are in the process. You're in the journey of it all and you're able to talk about it while you are going through it. And like, I know myself how hard it is. And so I just want to seriously like acknowledge you.
Thank
for
you.
That, 'cause I think it's awesome.
When you asked me to be on here, I was like, I should do this. This is almost like me giving my AA talk for the internet because it's like I'm going through the middle of something. I'm not like standing proud at the top.
Yes.
And there's a fear of just being vulnerable and sharing that with people. But I realize that it helps others because every time I go to an AA meeting and someone sits and talks and says something, I'm like, wow, that really impacted me. So hopefully something I said someone resonates with and it impacts them.
Yeah. Because I mean, honestly, the whole point of this podcast is like get people to talk about, it doesn't have to be on a public forum, but to get people to talk about, like, to their friends, their families, their loved ones, like, what they are going through while they're going through it, because that is truly vulnerability, where, like, when you are just sharing something that happened a long time ago that maybe you've already totally overcome, that's just being, like, transparent, you know? Like, just sharing what went down, but when you're able to talk about the things that you're actually processing right now with people, that's like true vulnerability. You're inviting people into that current space with you, which is just incredible.
Which did make me think of a quote, which is the whole like, wisdom to know the difference between things you can change and you cannot change.
Yes.
And giving
so true
ownership to what you're in control of.
Yeah.
So,
dude, well, thank you so much for being on. This has been amazing.
Thank you so much for having me here.
Cool.
Yeah. Unlock your freedom, guys.
Yes. Unlock your freedom. Thank you so much for watching my conversation with Davis Mallory today on the Unlock Your Freedom podcast. If you want more inspiring, life-giving conversations like what you heard today, you can click the big red subscribe button. and join the Freedom Family and go and follow me on my socials. Instagram is The Rage Boss. You're going to find some really weird, wild, but also hopefully some inspiring content on there as well. You can go follow me on Twitter there at The Rage Boss as well. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next.